Hello and welcome to the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast for the 18th of September 2011. My name's TRP Watson, and this week I am joined by Phil from the West End Whingers and Rev Stan. We're going to start off by talking about No Naughty Bits at the Hampstead Theatre. This is a play by Steve Thompson, and it's about a lawsuit brought by the Monty Python team in 1975 against the USA's ABC network, claiming that a 90-minute special that they made from the last three episodes of the final Monty Python series, TV series, infringed their copyright. It was overcut. Each episode was half an hour. They took three episodes. Each episode was half an hour long, and they made it into a 90-minute special, which included 22 minutes of adverts. So the cuts were fairly heavy, and some of the cuts seemed completely unnecessary. Things like washing naughty bits and an Indian slave boy being electrocuted in order to make him change the channel, which were excised from the broadcast. This play was thought up as something of a documentary for when it was first drafted. It was taken in part from Michael Palin's diary of the events, but has been sort of added humour. It also claims to be rather fictional. There's a rather long and tedious introduction at the beginning of each act to say that this is a fictional story, please do not take it seriously. And the Pythons are not they're not given their full name, although they're clearly supposed to be Michael Palin and Terry Gilliam, played by Haddon Payton and Sam Alexander. Now, Phil, what did you think of this?
Well, we were at the West End Whingers. We were quite excited about this because the subject matter sounded very interesting, and also putting the Pythons on stage is quite a feat in itself because we're very familiar with. Because putting the Pythons on stage, particularly Michael Palin, is very familiar to audiences through all his TV programs. And actually, to start with the good bits, I think that was handled very well. I think Harry Haddon Patton, really had a flavour of Michael Palin without doing an impersonation, and he's very sort of likeable. He's really got the feel of what Michael Palin might be like. And Sam Alexander's Terry Gilliam, although he reminded me a bit of Robin Asquith, but that's probably just the period.
The hairstyle,
and the shirts as well. There were some fabulous 70s shirts. You had a feel that he was a bit like Terry Gilliam, whatever he's like. So that was all very promising, and it's also got Clive Rowe as their lawyer, and Izzy Van Renwick as she's one of the network executives. Actually, the show is stolen in the second act by Matthew Marsh, and having seen the critics, they all seem to agree because he's incredibly funny as the judge. Second act has the court scene, and he has very dry delivery of some very good lines, and he almost makes it worth going to see. But actually, our problem was it just, apart from the scenes with Matthew Marsh, it didn't make us laugh, which you felt like that's what it was setting out to do. In fact, I would suggest, if you're going to go and see this, don't bother with the first act. Just read up on what it's about and just watch the second act, and you'll probably have a really good time. Having said that, the audience were falling about. Well, from about halfway back, for some reason, I don't know why. We did only see the second preview, so I think it may well have improved. It may be funnier now, I don't know. But we sat there quite stony-faced and came out quite grumpy at the interval. And having seen the show that we saw the night before, we probably have contemplated leaving. I'm glad we didn't because of Matthew Marsh, because he is excellent. I think also one of the problems was it could have sort of gone into more about censorship and perhaps differences between US and UK kind of comedic sensibilities, which it sort of touches on.
Yeah, it's rather clunky, that bit, and I thought that was obviously, you know, the one with the more obviously fictional things. I didn't think that they went into that. Also, there was a slight difficulty with Michael. I'm going to call it Michael Palin's character because I can't can't keep slipping over the name, but there was a thing about Michael Palin's character not being able to defend his comedy. And I would have thought that he would be able to defend his comedy. It's almost as if Steve Thompson doesn't want to explain comedy to anybody. You know, doesn't want to have to explain comedy.
Well, I think you actually can't explain comedy, probably. And I think Monty Python, because it's, you know, it's from my childhood and, you know, it was required viewing. And it was one of those things that it took you quite a long time, well, certainly for me at that age, to get. But we would all talk about it the next day at school. And I think it was the rudeness, actually, that as kids we were attracted to, because it was quite daring in its day. It wouldn't really be now, but it's sort of naughty schoolboyish kind of fun, and that's what I was. So, I don't think Andrew was ever a Monty Python fan, and I think that's probably a bit of the problem. This was the surreal kind of humour they did, which was groundbreaking, really, and has probably changed, you know, the way the comedy is done now. And also, I think the fact that when the players set the episodes they're talking about, it's post-John Cleese. So the Pythons were sort of not at their best anyway. And quite a bit is made of the fact that John Cleese is not in it. I think they do name... Do they call him just John in the play? I can't remember. Or do they say John Cleese?
I think they're fairly clear that I think they do mention him by name in the play, but they don't in the programme. It's sort of that kind of thing.
Well, they do play a snatch of the Fawlty Towers opening music, don't they?
Yes. But the thing is, though, that, I mean, the problems I had with this play were not so much with the play, because I thought he did a decent job, and he did a decent job of making you laugh. And as you said, you sort of go there expecting to laugh because it's Monty Python. But it's a very serious story, and there's lots of serious points to be made. And actually, you could have made a very serious, unfunny play. But I think that would have disappointed a lot of people who think, no, it's Monty Python. It's been sold to us as Monty Python, you know, almost Monty Python on stage. So he's had to sort of shoehorn lots of bits in, you know, put Terry Gilliam in lots of funny costumes and stuff like that, which work, but it's sort of slightly unsatisfying. And it is, as you say, it's not until you get the judge, Matthew Marsh's judge, coming in and really delivering a very funny performance that it really kicks off in terms of humour. The other thing is, as you said, you grew up with Monty Python. I sort of didn't catch up with Monty Python until the late 80s. I missed the first transmissions. I was either too young or not able to watch it because, television wasn't available where I was. And
Good God.
Yeah, well, sorry, I missed the 70s. That's terrible. But the point is that the Monty Python, we all think it's been on a lot, and it hasn't. It's been repeated about three times since it was first broadcast on terrestrial television. It's not you know, everyone says, oh yes, you know, it's cultural icons, and we all know the Ministry of Funny Walks and the fish slapping dance, but people don't necessarily know that, because where are they going to watch it? It has been on cable channels and satellite channels quite a lot. It was repeated on rotation about 5 years ago quite a lot, but I haven't seen it almost since then. It wasn't until 4 years ago when they actually got round to bringing out the DVDs DVDs of the series in the UK. I mean, they were available in America. It's always been a hit in America. You've always been able to get the DVDs, and before that, the videos. But the videos in this country disappeared in about 1995. So there's almost, you know, it's trying to sell it to something, to people who remember Monty Python. And people don't remember Monty Python, they just think they do.
It's funny because I actually, in the 70s, which would have been about 3 years after this, the play is set, I mean, it's very much about the turning point, because it's just before Monty Python broke in the States. I worked in a summer camp, and funnily enough, all the other counsellors there, who were American, were really, really into Monty Python and could quote it much better than I could. In fact, we all went to see it's bizarre, it's the first time I ever went to the cinema in the States, the film version, which was basically a clip show put together, and now for something completely different. So we all went to see that, and I thought, in those days, films took about 6 months to get to the UK, and we're going to see a film which is basically TV sketches knitted together, but they were loving it. And I'm thinking, why are you going to see this? Because you know them so well. But that's part of the fun, I suppose. I mean, I watch my favourite comedy things again and again and again. But it was, I was quite astonished by the phenomena of Monty Python in the States in the 70s. It was absolutely huge. And actually, I think, just going back, something else I wanted to mention. I think that the staging in the set, which sort of is very much a nod to Terry Gilliam's cartoons, was very effective. And it is quite clear from the start that it's meant to be a comedy from the way that it begins, because it has a sort of, it's topped and tailed with a couple of surrealish kind of Monty Python moments, which I didn't think quite worked. And in a way, I think they maybe could have made more of that between the scene changes, which we did only see the second preview, and the scene changes were terribly clunky then. I'm sure they're fine now.
Yeah, they were much smoother on the night I went.
Yeah, I mean, things were going wrong. Sets weren't coming on properly. And there was a fabulous bit where they do what's meant to be a sort of a coup de théâtre, which went horribly wrong because the lighting came on before they'd done it. So anyway, sorry, that's just us being picky, but that was a preview, so that's to be expected, to be fair, I think.
Right, we'll move on to My City at the Almeida Theatre. This is a play by Stephen Polyakov. It concerns a young man who bumps into his old primary school headmistress lying on a bench. They agree to meet up, and he discovers that she wanders now, it has left the school that she used to teach at, wanders the streets of London at night, and occasionally teams up with two other teachers from the same school. As a headmistress, she used to tell them fantastic stories and take them on sort of time-travelling expeditions throughout places, you know, through history and through London, and they would tell stories with the help of these two teachers. And the young pupil and the headmistress sort of meet up again, and with the two old teachers and an old friend of another ex-pupil, and they start telling stories again, start working through things again. I found this a waste of talent, really. It has some, you know, really interesting cast, people like Tracy Ullman, David Troughton, Circa Cusack, Sean Brooke and Tom Riley in it. This should have been really good, but I found it rather disappointing. How about you, Phil?
Well, exactly the same, because we were both there on the same night, and I think we should say we both saw the first preview. But actually, I mean, I don't think that's the problem. I think the problem's the play. It's just rather dull, and it's got an awful lot of themes going on in there, and to be honest, I didn't really care because I wasn't interested enough. I was interested enough at the first, at the end of the interval, because they set up quite an intriguing kind of, there's quite an air of spooky kind of creepiness, and you think there's going to be some sort of big reveal in the second act, which there isn't.
Yeah, you're looking for a thriller or a horror story, and you don't get anything like that.
And I think the main problem is it's tell and not show. They tell these stories, and that can work, like it does in, say, The Weir, which I thought was fabulous. But it's just, they're just telling these stories most of the time, and nothing really happens. And you don't, well, I didn't care about the characters. I dragged Andrew back for the second act. He nodded off. So, and I'm not surprised. I could hear somebody yawning behind me. Obviously, the big draw is Tracy Ullman, because she's back on stage. And because of that, that's why we saw the first preview, because for some reason it slipped off our radar. And the only night we could get seats for was the first preview. But as I say, I don't think that's the problem, because the performances, to a degree, are fine. I think that Tracy Ullman's miscast. She may well have got much better in the role, but I wasn't really convinced as her as a schoolmistress. There's a sort of touch of Joyce Grenfell about the way that she talks to the audience, which could have been quite entertaining. It's not really very, it's not funny. It sort of plods along, and you just wonder where it's going, and it doesn't really go anywhere, I felt.
Yeah, it does sort of just end, and also, I mean, I did think in the second half there was a particularly effective story done by David Troughton. And that just told, and that was almost Weir-like in its effectiveness. But it didn't really go anywhere. I mean, I'm always interested with Stephen Polyakov, because he does have these sort of twin obsessions. One is this sort of hidden London that he keeps wanting to go to, you know, either the seamier side or the mysterious side. I remember a film he did some time ago, Close My Eyes. Which he talked about stretches of the Thames in London being almost like the Amazon, because all the undergrowth is goes right up to the river, and there's nothing, you know, there's no, it's sort of a night, it's a big wide river with trees just blocking any view of anything at all. So you could almost see Klaus Kinski going down the river, killing his daughter, and the other obsession that he has is the idea of memory being destroyed. He's done this Shooting the Past, and in his play Remember This, which he did at the National, which is the last play he did. Shooting the Past was about a photographic archive, and Remember This was about a video archive, where the video degrades over time, so you lose everything, you know, everything slowly gets lost in that. And one of the teachers, the David Troughton character, keeps lots of artwork and lots of tapes of school assemblies, and decides to destroy them. We're never quite entirely sure about that. I mean, in fact, he would have been a much more, you know, if just doing the story about him would have been a much more interesting story, I think. And actually, that was one of the problems I was having with the play. You're watching it and thinking, there are 20 ways of doing this play differently. And and just wishing he would do that, he would have done it differently. And that's never a good sign in a play. You shouldn't ever think, you know, even if afterwards you think, well, he could have done this differently, while you're watching it, you shouldn't be thinking, well, you know, they shouldn't be doing it like this. So
I'm thinking about shopping lists, actually.
The other thing that we should point out is that this has been fairly well reviewed. I mean, it's a 3-star show for most people. Mark Shenton was very rude about it over Twitter, and I think in his stage review of it, he didn't like it at all. I think Michael Coveney gave it a fairly complimentary 4-star review. Not sure why.
That's the only one I've seen. Yeah.
And also Mark Shenton did say somebody fell asleep sitting next to him, one of the critics. So you have to look up and see if you can work out if anybody's a bit sketchy about the second half. it's disappointing. I mean, I just thought it was a waste. As I said, a waste of talent, really.
Well, there seemed to be an awful lot of ideas going on in there, but I just didn't really work out which one was the main theme, which is fine, but I thought there were too many, and that's fine, but I want to be interested at the same time, and I wasn't that interested. I was up to the interval reasonably, because you were just waiting for it to deliver something, but then it just sort of rambles on, and I think rambling would be the word I would sum it up with.
Okay, now we're going to talk about a new play downstairs at the Hampstead Theatre called Die Vivian Rose by Amelia Bullmore, and directed by Anna McMinn, starring Claudie Bakeley, Tamsin Althwaite, Nicola Walker. Rev Stan, you saw this. What did you think of it?
I really, really, really enjoyed it. I'll come straight out and say it. I thought it was a great piece of theatre. It's basically centres on these three women who meet at university and start sharing a house. And the first half is very much about their 3 years at uni, their life sort of living in their shared house. And then it follows them in the second half over the next 24 years and sort of visiting them at various points, sort of what happens to them, how they end up, and sort of the impact on their friendship. And I think what I liked, well, there's a couple of things that I think really made me like it. First of all, after seeing Top Girls, which is an all-woman play, and I felt sort of was a bit dated, even though this is set in the 80s, it still felt very contemporary, it still felt very fresh. And I thought it was a great piece of writing. There was plenty I could identify with. But the second thing that I really liked about it was I feel that there's been a run of new plays that have tried to cover really, really big issues, capitalism, the environment, all this sort of stuff, a lot of browbeating. And it was refreshing to actually go and see a new play that wasn't trying to sort of tackle these big issues. There was a lot of issues that are sort of like are on the fringe of it. You know, there's rape, there's AIDS, there's lesbianism, there's all sorts of issues in there, but it's all about the friendship at its heart, and these issues are sort of what shapes that friendship and what shapes these women. And it was nice to sort of see that rather than, I mean, I'm thinking particularly the most recent thing is what was it called, Play at the Royal Court? I've forgotten the name of it, the one that's on at the moment.
Oh, Faith Machine.
Yes, plays like that that are sort of trying to tackle these big ideas, and have sort of lose their heart along the way because of it, and this didn't do that, and it was very funny, it was nicely done, it was very, very fast paced, but sort of had a more gentle pace when it needed it, and I thought all round it was a very good evening at the theatre, entertaining. It was sad in places. It made you laugh a lot. It was nice. And it was nice to see a play written by a woman with three women in it that sort of felt contemporary.
Okay, we can move on now to the new play at the Cottesloe Theatre by Mike Lee. It's called Grief. It was only just got its name. It only got its name about a week ago. This is one of his plays where the actors develop characters, and it's built up through collaboration and improvisation with his team. And it concerns a widow, a war widow in 1958, struggling with her daughter, her adolescent daughter, who is growing up, and her brother, who's about a decade or so older than her, who is on the brink of retirement. So it brings that in, and it runs through 2 hours. I found it very, very atmospheric. Leslie Manville, who plays the widow, was particularly good. Breathtaking in places, performance. It's done with very short scenes to tell this story. The only problem I had with it is I thought it was pared down a little bit too much. The you know, because of the way that Mike Lee works, they all know their characters. You can see that in the expertise of Leslie Manville, that she really knows the character that she's playing and puts it in, but we're not actually given an awful lot of information. I was getting a little bit of back chat, you know, from people behind me saying, "So is he a husband then?" About Sam Kelly, who played her brother, and it just didn't. We weren't really told enough during the story, which I found rather frustrating. And I think that had it not been Mike Lee, had I not known that all the actors really knew their characters very well, and they were just telling me fragments of the story, I think I would have been rather more annoyed. So, Refstan, what did you think about it?
Well, I'm a big fan of Mike Lee's work. I like the subtlety in his work. I particularly liked his most recent film, Another Year. And so I was interested to see sort of how it sort of translated to the stage. For all its subtlety and for all its pared downness, I found it very compelling and very engaging. And there was a lot to talk about afterwards. My companion for the evening, Polly, and I had a long, long discussion about it afterwards. And there was a couple who'd been to see it on the same bus as me going home, and they were having a long discussion about it. But I think ultimately it's one of those plays that you sort of enjoy at the time and then immediately afterwards. But as you put more and more distance between yourself and having seen it, it becomes a bit forgettable. Brilliant performances. Interesting story, compelling, subtle, but it doesn't stand out in any way, I wouldn't say. And it's going to be a difficult. I haven't actually written my review of it yet, and it's going to be a difficult one to to rate because I did enjoy it at the time. But if I'm thinking,
yeah, I'm pretty much with you on that. We do have to point out, of course, it is a first preview, and it might change between now and the opening night. I mean, it only got a name in the last week, so it might change slightly. They might do something about it. They might notice that there might be problems about it. I mean, certainly people leaving the theatre were a little bit nonplussed, you know, and saying, well, is that all there is? Even as they'd sat through and been in rapt attention while it was on, but it wasn't enough. I don't think you got enough detail from the actors. And but I think that as it's an early preview, we have to give it something of a buy. But the actual production, there was nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with nothing at all wrong with the acting. But there's just not enough of there wasn't enough of it, which is I'm not sure if that gets solved between now and the opening night.
But then I suppose the thing is about the thing that I like about. I do like about Mike Leigh, which I think is very much his style, and you see it a lot in his films, is that he's very good at suggesting things and not actually sort of shoving stuff in your face. So he can, as an audience, you can sort of debate and discuss and have your own sort of, put your own spin on things. And that's something I do like about him, and that's probably why we ended up having a long discussion about it afterwards, because there is definitely room for you to put your interpretation on what's going on more than sort of than a lot of other plays.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are going to criticise me for saying that it's pared down and I wanted to know more information. It's almost how dare you, and especially when you're dealing with Mike Leigh. But I think that we mustn't go around giving Mike Leigh a buy just because he's Mike Leigh. He's got to pull it out of the bag. And I thought this was, it's good, it's well acted, but it's insubstantial in the end. But there's some very nice attention to detail, and the funniest thing was that Ruby Bentall's character was almost exactly the same age as my mother. Which was rather amusing for me. It was sort of second week of January 1958, and oddly enough, she also always wanted a duffel coat, apparently. So
there were some nice bits in it. There were some very, very nice, very nice bits in it, and I thought the actress that played the teenage daughter was great.
Yeah, well, Ruby Bentall is a wonderful actress. She's only come up through in the past few years, but even in the first thing I saw her, I went round and I pointed her out a few months after I'd first seen her at the National Theatre. I was with the West End Whingers, and I said, look over her, she's going to be good. She's good. You want to look out for her. She is, of course, the daughter of Janine Dowitzki, who is a long-time collaborator of Mike Leigh, and was in the original production of Abigail's Party.
Ah, right. Yes. So I wonder if that helps in her casting.
Well, I don't know that it helps in her casting. She's good enough to have come on, even if she wasn't Janine Dowitzki's daughter. She's a very good actress. I mean, they wouldn't not have her in it. You can follow the podcast at AYULTP on Twitter, on Facebook, the as yet unnamed London Theatre podcast page, and online at ayu-londontheatre.org. Thank you. Goodbye.